Ah, Geralt of Rivia.
Yes, I'm here about the Wyvern contract.
Oh. Ooh, that's going to be a problem.
Why would that be a problem? I'm a witcher. I'm here to claim the contract. Pretty straightforward, really.
Yes, that would be true, most of the time. But someone has already claimed it.
Hi, there's your Wyvern, dead as a doornail, and about as dangerous.
Mr. Geralt of Rivia, meet Mr. Adam Jensen of Detroit.
Jensen, you a witcher, Jensen?
No, Geralt, what's a witcher?
A witcher, Adam, is one who gets given contracts to kill monsters.
Exactly, of Rivia. Given. I was given the contract out of the blue. I never asked for this.
Well, you got it. Give me one good reason why I shouldn't kill you where you stand.
Because where you stand is where you'll lie when I kill you where you stand.
Not if I kill you where you stand, I'll kill you first.
I'm gonna kill you.
I'm gonna kill you.
That was awful. Who'll take care of my next contract?
Hi, I'm Batman. I like to claim any open contracts.
Get out.
Welcome to 28 Plays Later. I'm Chris Straub.
I'm Paul Verhoeven, and this is our special Witcher 3 episode. Chris. Oh, Chris.
Oh,
how you doing,
goodness,
buddy?
Paul, I am doing okay. We're actually traveling because I'm visiting my brother in Los Angeles for his wedding, and we're in a new place with a baby, and he's having a rough go of it this evening. So we're going to see if our gentle listeners can hear the cries of a baby in the background. We'll give you a prize.
Originally, we were going to actually leave it. I thought it might add some nice ambience to that sketch. You know, you were in a bit of a sketchy medieval inn. There could very well be a baby, you know,
a squalling child somewhere in the distance.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, the general ambience of the lamentation of women folk could be kind of nice. It could add to the, you know, add to the flavor of the Witcher universe.
But I was going to say, if I listen back to this and I like what I sound, then maybe I'll underbed it with some medieval, like the sounds of carts going past and so forth. But if I don't like it, then it's just going to be nothing.
Yeah.
Just dead bone silence.
I think in an age where 13-year-old women were considered old and where 15-year-old boys were kings and where people literally flung shit out of buildings in buckets, you can probably leave in the sound of a crying baby. I think it adds to the ambience, you know?
That's true. Yeah. I appreciate your kind words, and I'll take them to heart tonight. And, and maybe tonight, then, as I'm trying to sleep, I'll pretend that I'm Geralt of Rivia.
You're a Nilf parent or Nilf guardian.
Oh! And thanks to me reading The Witcher Primer, I now understand.
Yes.
Paul, you very graciously linked on our Facebook page, facebook.com/28playslater.
Seamless!
Seamless. Polygon did had a Witcher 3 guide. If you have not played Witcher before, and I'll tell you what, this is the first time I played through any amount of a Witcher game. I tried Witcher 2, and I don't know what was going on, but somewhere in the first 10-15 minutes, I said, no, this must not be for me.
Yeah,
somehow it lost me. But then, Witcher 3, Wild Hunt... I found myself typically, I read fast, I keep subtitles on in a game like this.
Yeah.
I typically can read faster than they speak it. So I just go click, 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 skip, skip, skip.
Right.
I don't want to skip. I'm listening to all the dialogue.
Yeah, I turn the subtitles off so I can actually just kind of soak up the plot. And whenever I get a book or whenever I'm finding myself standing there in the muck and the filth listening to people talk. Because in one of the first towns you get to, in this story, the Emperor of Nilfgaard has actually invaded the north. And there's a child singing, kind of skipping through the mud, singing this, you know, this like little rhyming couplet, this kind of child song about the Emperor. And his dad's like, cut that out. And he's like, but my friend Jimmy sings it. I will kill you and I will kill Jimmy where you stand. You know, just this really nice air of, we've just been invaded. Please keep that shit on the down low. It's really nice. There's a lot of, and I know this term is utter wank, Chris, but it's like environmental storytelling at its best. But listen, before we brag too much about how great this game is, I'm sorry, man. It's zeitgeisty. Another word I hate. Before we get too deep into The Witcher 3, if you follow us on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot, we did actually, the lovely folks over at Namco Bandai actually gave us 3 copies of The Witcher 3 on Xbox One to give away to 3 lucky listeners. And What you had to do was head across, like our Facebook page, and then comment and basically describe which monster from The Witcher you would barbecue and why. And so we've picked three, and we're going to read them now.
You've got the first one, I believe.
I do have the first one. Yeah, Holly Jane said, am I allowed to barbecue Geralt? He is delicious looking. Weird winky face emoji. I would even have him raw. Gross. That's very paleo of you, Holly. So we
decided disgusting.
It's frankly disgusting, and he's swimming with disease. He's the pigeon of meats. So
I would say that's why it's disgusting, and that's why we've given you third place. Of course, all the prizes are the same. It's a code for, you know, the full game on Xbox One, so enjoy it.
Yeah.
But just know that it is third place because no, thank you.
And Chris, who came second?
Second, we've selected Sean McNeil, who said, barbecue a ghoul, turnabout is fair play. A little spoilery, not too bad, just enough so that I could enjoy it.
Just a scooch of spoiler, yeah.
But thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Sean. And then we had the final winner.
Oh, Christopher Farmer, you absolute magnificent smartass. Let us consider the folktale. Upon first glance, this dragonet appears to offer little actual meat, but what it lacks in quantity can be made up for in quality if prepared correctly. First, be sure your local butcher attained his forktail wild caught in the Skellige Isles, and not from one of the many cruel forktail hatcheries found in the Northern Kingdoms. And then he goes on for probably 9 paragraphs, like, fill chest cavity with Belize fruit, 1 large crow's eye, diced, celandine, and suet mushrooms, with butcher string tied the cavity shut. He's like the Jamie Oliver of the North. It's amazing. So Christopher Farmer, you came first, and like Chris pointed out, there is literally no difference between the three, apart from the title bestowed upon you. So well done. We look forward to your full-length Witcher cookbook. So all three of you will be getting a copy or a download code for The Witcher on Xbox One very shortly, so keep your eyes peeled on your inboxes.
Much appreciated for participating, and thank you to everybody for liking us on Facebook. We hope you'll find it worth your while.
Ooh.
At least I think we will. Hmm. Well, that's on us, really. But let's, instead of talking about social media concessions, let's speak about the game itself. I wanted to ask you this. As we kicked off our venture, this podcast, with discussion of Bloodborne, I am enjoying the open world textures of Witcher 3, but I'm also discovering that the preparation for these mythical fights is such a fascinating thing. Bloodborne kind of throws you in the deep end and it's trial and error. Mm. But in this case, the Witcher has lore to call upon to combat these beasts.
Yeah.
And prepare, which is another thing. You kind of can't throw yourself into the fight and just say, all right, I'm gonna throw myself directly into it and we'll just see what happens. It's a bad policy.
Yeah.
You kind of have to study. You have to prepare potions. You have to do the work ahead of time to do it properly.
Exactly. I mean, because a lot of games and movies and books and films have that kind of trope of hunting monsters, but very few of them, if any, have ever actually addressed like how you do that properly. Because effectively, you're just a 100-year-old dude with a sword and some kind of tangential magical powers. But if you don't smear your blade in the right lubricant, sorry, oil, it's the
same difference.
Same diff, yeah. It's all means to an end. Lets it slide in better. But basically, if you don't use the same oils and take the right potions, and some monsters you have to like seek out and hunt with minimal prompting from the game, you have to actually do your research and check your bestiary, and it tells you that these things only appear at certain times of day in certain environments, and you need to pick these herbs to kind of prepare for the battle. It does make you feel like the victories are kind of more earned, you know, because you, even on easy mode, you can't really just smash your way through this game, I would say.
Well, that's what was interesting. So I'm sure I'll bring it up 1 trillion times more, but I was going to say, as a father with limited time to play, I gravitated toward the easiest setting, which I believe, I don't remember the name of it, but essentially it's like, just enjoy the story.
Oh, it's a great
story.
I think it's called Just the Story, which I love that they're being honest about.
Yeah, I mean, there's still combat, but it's very easy, so you can get on with it and actually not be put off if you're not that good of a gamer. Mm. I did that initially. One of the first... Can we talk about who one of the first big guy you fight is? Or is that too deep?
Well,
it just came out.
As long as we give it a bit of a, like, okay, let's put it this way, guys. There's an opening tutorial which is, again, beautiful. Like, absolutely gorgeously done.
Yes.
So good and so atmospheric. And if you've read the novels, it does kind of throw you back into the deep end of the novels. Because Chris, I don't know if you knew this, but the first Witcher game, basically, rather than go, okay, you have to have read a few novels to understand this universe, they just kickstart the series by giving Geralt amnesia. And he pretty much has to stumble back into his old life, and as he relearns things, we learn for the first time. So the tutorial mission, again, first 30 seconds of the game, this kicks off, it is set pre-amnesia. So you do get to experience this lovely golden era of Geralt and his mates hanging out and practicing and whatnot. Straight after that mission, the first big monster that you have to hunt is firmly established as kind of part one of the game. So I don't think it's spoilery. I think, you know what, go ahead, say it.
Ghost? No. it's like all that preamble to say I didn't actually play the game. No, the first town you come across is being beleaguered by a griffin.
Mm.
And like I said, I was playing in just the story mode because I just want to check it out. And much like the very first experience I had with Bloodborne, where I come into a thing and I'm just jamming on any attack button I can, that was a bad idea. Even in just the story mode, poor choice. But once I settled in and I said, okay, when he comes at me, I got to dodge. When he's on the ground, I got to do this. You know, once you start to get into, no, you can't just hit the attack button as many times as you can. You have to be cautious. Then, and not only did that, was that of course effective, but it's so much more satisfying to know that you did it the right way by the book, Batman.
Yeah.
You know, we have to show him that the book still works.
It's so good because there is this part where you can start specking into different talents, and the talents are very, because it's quite hard to level up, and you can occasionally find ability points scattered around the game world, but there is one talent point that you can drag in, and you can only have a few active at a time, and one of them is that it lets you parry arrows. Now, there is nothing more satisfying in this game than approaching a camp of bandits as the rain's hitting, and the physics are actually making the wind hit your hair and the trees in a realistic way, and you can't see crap because there's a storm coming, and you can see some guys lit up by the campfire, and when I approached, my guys actually put the fire out because they heard me, right? So they're approaching me and I can vaguely see them, and then I heard an arrow being knocked, and I parried an arrow out of the air and then ran at them and, you know, cast a few signs. And I emerged barely alive, but I'd killed five dudes and I staggered back to town. And there's a real sense of accomplishment from having, this game doesn't really spoon feed you. It doesn't do that thing that I hate that we've talked about on the podcast before, that games like Assassin's Creed will do. You know, press Y to counter. There's no joy in being spoon fed victory like that. Whereas in The Witcher, granted, it's kind of it's nowhere near as complex as Bloodborne, but yeah, you do have to pay attention. And when you actually beat a guy after paying attention in a fight, you feel like you've earned those victories, you know?
Well, I felt like you're talking about like the Batman, like Arkham Asylum and that type of stuff, where it's sort of like, I mean, the fights were satisfying, but it's almost like a rhythm game, because when you see the little electric, like, counter this guy, you hit Y, and then you immediately, Batman, no matter how far away he is from him, leaps across the battlefield to counter that guy and put a fist in his throat, and then he leaps back the other way to return to the other person he was initially hitting.
Yeah, he propels himself 19 feet across a crowded room into a dude's face, yeah.
And I like those games, and they look very fluid, and they're fun. Mm. But I do remember being in a scenario with, you know, there's 16 henchmen circling around me, and I'm just sort of hitting X and Y, and I'm just sort of pinballing off each one and not really getting touched. It wasn't until later in the game when they introduced enemies like, well, you can't counter this guy, or, you know, certain states he's going to knock you out or whatever, that it's like, okay, now there's some strategy.
Yeah, whether you have the guy with the knife or the shield or the picture of the dead Wayne parents, you know, which you have to actually use.
The shield, yeah, it's pretty profound how quickly they could whip that up. They just go to a print shop and said, can you put Thomas and Martha writ large on this car door, and I'll just hoist that into battle.
Yeah, just, and then just, you know, like a canvas effigy of Alfred's head that you can just hold aloft like a talisman, which will ward off like Master Bruce. Just a little soundbite played at him.
He just has a little, you just pull the string.
Well, that's the thing in the Arkham games, when they found out who Bruce was, right? Because I mean, Arkham City especially does kick off with the bad guys effectively knowing who you are for the most part. Why they didn't use that kind of emotional leverage to get to him more, in a kind of crude way, just give every single grunt, seriously, just a picture of the Wayne Manor just, you know, being pissed on by a giant, what was
Calvin.
He?
Yeah. No, yeah. I was... Do you think that over time, any Batman villain who said, I'm going to use that against you, and Batman's like, look, man, I'm a human being. I actually did get over the death of my parents. Does Batman know that everybody's parents die? And it's a sad event? And that everybody kind of has to get over it? Not everybody becomes a superhero. Even when their parents are murdered, Batman needs to let this go.
Well, this is a case of, like, what happens when you have too much money and too much power, Chris. Because if you are a young child and your parents die and you want to get revenge, you let it stew for a bit, you go to therapy, that's it. If you are a billionaire with people who never say no to you and a private jet which can take you straight to Nepalese training facilities, then that's what you do. Like, this is... Like, if a young Rupert Murdoch had his parents die, this is probably what he would do. Granted, he would be fighting against the poor people rather than for them, but, like, that's... That, like, I really do think Batman is a tale about, you know, what happens when you have too much money. But getting back to The Witcher, what I like about The Witcher is the fact that, like, you can save an entire village worth of people, but because these people are disgusting, savage, uneducated brutes, because this is a very realistic, very grimy take on the medieval fantasy, probably because it comes from Eastern Europe and it's being told from a far darker place, you do have these moments where you'll save people's lives, and it doesn't matter, because the second you show them any glimmer of magical power or anything they don't understand, they freak out and they cast you out, because... These people are uneducated and afraid, and there's no electricity and there's no mass communication, and it's a world kind of balanced. It's very much an actual Dark Ages interpretation of fantasy, which I think might be why I liked it so much.
Yeah, no, I appreciated it too. And it also prevents... It's sort of an... Not that when he wrote the books it was the point, but it sort of is a solution to the Skyrim problem of, hey, I know you saved... the whole world and you killed 20 dragons, but put that loaf of bread down. You're under arrest.
Yeah.
You want to go to the jail for 3 hours? No, I think I should be afforded a loaf of bread.
You know what? I'm going to take this bread. Like, I'm on your money now. I'm on your coins. I saved so many of you that there's a side on profile of me on your fucking dinars or whatever. So please, wait, what's the currency in Skyrim? What's the currency?
Rimbies.
It's
you get a couple of hard rimbies rattling around in your pocket. It's a good day.
The sweet tinkle of rimbies in a poor man's pocket. I don't remember either.
It doesn't matter.
I really do think, because in The Witcher, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but there are countless examples of the plot will let you make decisions that are very organic, and it doesn't present you with a paragon or renegade icon. You just sort of do what feels right. You can play the game, and I'm actually arguing now that this game is effectively the spiritual successor to Red Dead Redemption, because it's you on a horse riding around basically a Western-style, Ronin-style landscape, doing good or doing ill, and sort of just dealing with the fallout in a very grey way. There is no good or evil meter. There is no Fallout-style, you know, good or bad karma. If you want to save... an orphan and accept the money and then go and chat with the orphan afterwards and tell him why you did it, you can do that. If you want to keep the reward for yourself and just piss off into the sunset, you can do that. If you want to kill a bunch of guards and then see what that does to the plot, and I've done that a few times later on in the game, and it does drastically change the landscape of the game in really interesting ways. Everybody is redeemable and everybody has good and bad in them. And I
was going to say that, like, the comparison to Red Dead Redemption is such a great one, because I enjoyed Red Dead Redemption enormously, and there was such a pleasure in riding my horse across those landscapes and seeing what you could get into, what trouble you get into, or what good you could do.
Yeah.
And it's very, very similar to that. And I don't want to say, like you said with the bandits, there's more than enough to do out there that does not involve reading and drinking and preparing potions ahead of time.
Yeah.
There's plenty of bandits on the road. There's an inordinate number of dogs just off the thoroughfares, waiting to take a bite out of your haunches. And I've seen it. If I've seen it once, I've seen it a dozen times.
Yeah.
And actually on one of the very early, passes through. I think it's the first time I went up to the what do you call it? It's the guardhouse where you first meet the fella who tells you about the griffin. But there was like a cache of wild dogs just hanging out on the road, and I got Geralt gets his sword out for some reason because combat is about to start, even though I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got off my horse. I took a couple swings. I wandered into some poisonous gas, which is apparently very flammable.
Oh, isn't that great?
which is such a great dynamic. And I said, you know what? Maybe the dog stuff can wait until I put a level on. even though it was not terribly hard. But it's like, this is not the fight I wanted yet. I was on my way to another plot point. But it's there for the taking if you want it, you want to wander off the road.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at one point I got a quest to basically find a bunch of... Because in the game universe of The Witcher, witches aren't really... Because the tenet behind witches is we need monsters to fight monsters. And so they infuse witches with monster DNA so that they can better hunt monsters and, you know, have slightly supernatural powers. But the cost is that people hate them. They don't trust them. And of course... I mean, I think it's.
I was going to say the comparison. To fight monsters, we created monsters. Mm. It's Pacific Rim meets Neon Genesis Evangelion, which equals Neon Genesis Evangelion. There's actually no difference. It completely absorbs Pacific Rim at that point.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. They made these beings, these genetically engineered witchers, to do the dirty work of fighting these creatures. And then for their trouble, they are hated. Nobody likes witchers.
And they don't
hate... Nobody likes a witcher. Well, they don't... Yeah, they just are like, can you go away, please? You're gross.
If you do anything nice to these people, they are genuinely shocked. Like, you will refuse to accept the reward. Hey, I'd heard the most awful things about witchers, Master Frodo. And then you have to sort of go... No. And then Geralt doesn't get annoyed. He's just like, all right, I'll see you later. And he just kind of wanders off into the sunset. By the way... if you read the Codex entries, the journal entries, they're written by a character called Dandelion, who is kind of a traveling bard, who was a very prominent character in The Witcher 2. And Dandelion is sort of... I'm trying to think of an equivalent. Kind of like, did you see... oh, God. Did you see Keanu Reeves in Constantine?
No, okay. I didn't.
Shia LaBeouf played a character in Constantine, kind of like Short Round, right? Like his driver, his plucky comic relief. Dandelion in the second game was... because all the journal entries are written by Dandelion in his kind of memoirs about Geralt and about what's happening now. So everything you read is sort of tinted by this. Like, it's told by an... what's the term? Like an unreliable narrator. Yeah? Because he's clearly trying to write himself into the historical records. So what's interesting about the horse combat is that I got really attached and he's like, come on, Roach. He calls his horse Roach.
His horse is, Roach.
Which is really nice until you read the Codex entry and it's like, Geralt calls all his horses Roach. And I'm like, how many horses are you going through? This is the kind of medieval universe in which, your horse could be stuck with an arrow and dead. And then Geralt, who is kind of sentimental, but also like a realist. And like I said, he's about 100 years old. So he's sort of...
Well, apparently he might be very fond of roaches. I mean, maybe that has some sort of a sentimental attachment for him.
Well, I thought that too, but then I realized that in the second game, at one point you have a choice to either side with Yorveth, who is the head of the Elven Revolution. And again, great character, but he is painted as a terrorist and a homicidal maniac. So whilst you sympathize with his cause, you kind of hate the guy, even though he's charming and lovely. On the other hand, you have this human guy, Roach, R-O-C-H-E, Roach, sorry. And I thought he'd named his horse after Roach, who he was kind of mates with. Yeah. granted, in my version of The Witcher 2, I sided with Yorveth, and it does have a really nice save game import version, which kind of affects the inflection of the world, which is nice. So you do, you get to do that, you get to import your save games, which is
so wait, okay, so you did you import your save game, did you at any point so again, another plot point, before you I don't remember the character's name now, and maybe that's for the best so that I don't end up spoiling anybody. I'll start this way. I did not play The Witcher 2, so I did not have a save game to import. Mm. So the game had to kind of fast track me through a question and answer period to get it like attenuated around what may have happened in Witcher 2 and whatever, why I don't have a save game. Mm-hmm. And during it, Geralt is taking a bath. And I remember thinking, this is the second bath in about 45 minutes in a game. I have so I take it that did you not experience this bath time Geralt?
I read about the bath time. I didn't get the bath time, which is a real bummer. Yeah, I know. But just because he has, this is going to come off weird, but I really like Geralt's body because it's the body of a man who is out using his body for like he's using it. It's not the body of a bodybuilder. Yeah.
Just keep saying it.
It's the
Ooh, yeah, tell me.
Oh, it's just these weird oiled wolf nipples. So His buddy is he's scarred beyond belief, and there's lots of... And if you do some of the fist fighting in the game, because you can basically go and do a bunch of boxing side quests, because he's a very good fist fighter.
Yeah.
And boxing in this game does have kind of the same, you know, parry, dodge mechanics of the sword combat, but the upside is it doesn't kill anyone. So you can kind of fumble your way through some of the combat in this game like that. And he fights with his shirt off, but his gloves on, and he has the most amazing thrust muscle I have ever seen since Brad Pitt in Snatch. Like, he's got this superb V just heading straight down to his... Just, oh, he's amazing.
Oh, that arrow, the arrow down there, like this, like a funnel.
Everything's sort of pointing straight towards, you know, the main attraction. So he has these fights, and after the fight, he kind of folds his arms and stretches and thrusts around, and he's kind of, there's sweat glistening off his very realistically rendered body. And I was one stop down from Boner Town at that point. Like, I was very, very, and I was kind of impressed because... The first two games, especially the second, really do hypersexualize women. And in the first game, no joke, there was a trading card system. You would unlock basically collector's cards for every woman that you slept with. The game was primarily a womanizing-based sim, but you didn't have to. It wasn't... Anyway, I'm not going to get into the sexist politics of The Witcher, yeah. But I am really enjoying the fact... But there are a few really great politically correct, gender-forward, you know, progressive depictions of characters in this game, whether it's, like, gay men, transgender characters. There's a few really interesting, you know, ways they address that in the game. Not to the extent that Dragon Age Inquisition did, and, by the way, we've had a few requests to do a Dragon Age episode, so we should talk about that in another episode. but I'm really impressed with how well-written the game is. On almost every level, I haven't felt like there's been any grind at all. Like any
No, no. It's been very enjoyable, and I was going to mention that you can. I want to say that it's much more robust than Red Dead Redemption, and I wonder how it'll bear out as the longer the game goes. Mm-hmm. But you can go to every town. I'm assuming every town will have like a message board, like a posting board, where people have written not just jobs that you can take on, but like notes of like avoid this guy's house. He's a crazy man.
Yeah.
Just stuff that you would put on a town bulletin board. It's not just like. Contract to deliver this to this other guy or whatever, where it would seem procedural. This is the crux of what I'm getting at. I don't, from what I've played so far, I don't think they are procedural. I think that they each have a story to them.
Yeah, I think Skyrim did brag that I had procedurally. They said, you will never stop having quests. And I'm like, well, they're not quests if they're pumped through a procedurally generated algorithm. If it's just, you know, like a Mad Libs for kill X monster in Y location with Z weapon at F time of day. Whereas in this, every single quest is written. Every single bulletin board is actually written up. And... according to an article on Polygon, the game is between 25 and 200 hours long, depending on how much you actually play. And now, in most cases, that's kind of... That sends a chill down my spine, because as an OCD-riddled completionist, I'm like, I have to finish all of them, even if the quests are awful. In this game, I have done some side quests which have legitimately reduced me to tears. There's two in particular. I won't go into spoilers, but some of them require actual thinking and logic, and you can probably just smash your way through this game. But if you're going to play it, just please just pay attention to the characters, because the world is so... It wants to tell stories. Like, it wants to convey something.
Well, to that end, ordinarily, I would take a game like this and I would sort of play my traditional Paragon softy. Yeah. And I had started to play it that way where... I don't know whether or not it has bearing on the game. It wouldn't surprise me if it did. But in the early tutorial area, you are interacting with these characters. And, of course, the options are like, I think you should take it easy on her, or that's no excuse, you know. So it's sort of like choosing whether or not you're a nice or an unreasonable man. And then when I read later, well, I guess Geralt is kind of a son of a bitch. It made me go back and just choose those anyway, because it's like, let me see the game that, like the through line that the writers probably did the strongest amount of work on. I don't know how much of a difference it's going to make, but I didn't want to end up in a position where it's like, no, he has to kill a guy, and my nice guy Geralt was just like, he's not going to be satisfied either way. Let me see what the base case is for this game if I'm going to get one run through.
I usually play Mass Effect games or whatnot, games with moral choices, moral barometers, and I'm playing The Witcher 3 the same way, with what I like to call the Malcolm Reynolds ratio of good to evil. So it's, or the Han Solo, if you want to be, you know, actually accurate, it's 2/3 good, 1/3 bad. So I will be really good and noble, but occasionally I will kick a guy into a jet engine. You know what I mean? Just to keep people on edge. Like, I think we trust this guy, but we're not sure if he's going to fly off the handle. So there's really nice bits where I will spend a whole area you know, helping, let's say, an innkeeper. And then at the end, she's told me she doesn't like violence, so I've talked everyone through stuff and I've negotiated and been really diplomatic. But I get to a certain point with these dudes in the bar and they're giving her shit and one of them hits her and I cut their heads off. That actually happens and she goes, "Get out!" And I'm like, "All right, lady, you knew what the deal was when I came in. I have the eyes of a cat. I soak my weapons in the bloods, in the blood of other monsters before I go into battle."
Just in bloods, period.
It's bloods, yeah, bloods. What's the collective noun for bloods? So, I mean, I do think it's more thrilling to play a game that way with, like, I'm a good guy, but I have my limits in terms of how much I will kowtow to these bloody savages. Like, that's kind of, right. Which, that's how I played Red Dead Redemption as well. I would wander around and I would be, if I heard someone screaming, I would double back and help them. But if people mess with me past a certain point, I'm like, look, I'm tired. My character hasn't slept in several days. He's been on the road. He's got saddle sores. He's dealt with 100 years of teenage kids and their medieval rap music. So there's no way I'm not gonna cut a bitch.
No, that makes sense. And yeah. It is precisely what you can do in Red Dead Redemption. I traditionally, I don't know why I do it, but I always gravitate towards it's so you're my two types that I play, either super, super good guy or thief. Who just is looking out for himself. He's not going to go out of his way to cause trouble, but he's like, all right, I'm going to wait till you're done talking and I'm going to take your rings, you know?
Can I recommend playing this game a little bit more towards the chaotic good spectrum? Because some of the story options, if you start thinking like that kind of character, you will go, well, why don't I go and visit this person? Like, you'll finish a quest and they will mention that they met up with this character and the quest finishes. They don't tell you to go to this place, but they will mention that somebody was asking about this person. So if you go off on your own and take the initiative, which is what the two-thirds good, one-third bad Geralt would do, then what you end up doing is kind of running into a lot more intriguing story options, and you're also a lot more invested, because I know you, you're not a bad guy in real life, so why would you play an all-out bad guy unless you have this creepy power fantasy?
Well, exactly. I need the reasoning for that. Or if you treat it like I'm reading a book, and what type of a book do I think I want to read, that I could understand playing it that way. But I do have a need of, like, I'm going to... Like in Red Dead Redemption, anytime, like, I'd see an attack outside of a saloon, it doesn't matter what I've been through, I feel horrible if I miss that shot and I don't stop that attack from happening.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I've blown it, like I've failed. So that's how I play. That's how I like to do it.
I guess because I went through this period. I try and play game characters with the kind of moral fortitude and bravery that I don't have in real life. Because I'm the kind of guy that will see trouble in real life and sort of, you know, you do that thing where you pretend you haven't seen it and you get a little bit shy and a bit bashful and you don't... Because you know that to engage with the three guys hassling that smaller guy, you will have to put yourself out there. And as somebody who was, if I'm going to be frank, very badly bullied throughout school, I do have a sort of... I have a sort of knee-jerk reaction to, you know, having to, like... It's very... You have to hyperextend yourself emotionally and physically to put yourself into these scenarios. So I play characters who have the bravery and guts to actually go there and do those things. So I tend to default to helping people. So with Geralt, I'm going through a lot of these quests without accepting reward money. And let me tell you something, it is busting my balls. Because a lot of the good schematics you get for, you know, like Witcher diagrams to craft your own things, in the amazingly robust crafting system in this game, you need money. Like, you need money. And I don't have this any because I'm a good guy.
This is one of very few games where I actually would wander around and pick plants up. Because, like, I know it's crafting, and I never really care about it. But in this case, yes, you do have to come up with potions. Mm-hmm. And honestly, there's plants everywhere to be had. It doesn't take me that much longer to go around and see what I might need for later. I might surprise myself and discover, oh, I actually have everything I want. But in this case, see, my first playthrough, I said, I'm a good guy. I saved a guy. He's like, I don't have much, but here's my money. And I said, no mind. The knowledge that justice was done is enough for me. But then I realized, when I read that Geralt is kind of a dick, I went back and I said, no, let's have it.
Hang on. Where did you read he was a dick?
This is the part. I'm going to have to find what I discovered. But I was thinking that to play the game properly, it may have been in one of these primers, but it was like, they don't refuse payment. They want to get paid. They're here to get the money.
Yeah, but I say that.
And I thought, well, I got to do that.
No, because I have Geralt say that. I'm like, he's like, you know, we don't work for free. And then they come up and they're literally this poor guy. I went to the, again, minor spoiler. I go to start a boxing fight and there's a quest to actually beat all the fights in this one region. right?
Yeah.
You have to go and beat these fights. And the first guy I go to is called Fish Gulper, and he's this kind of, I get there and he's this scrawny guy with like two teeth missing, and he's got this, because they've modeled all the faces off what look like real faces, so he's got this intense human sympathy to him, and he's like,
yeah, the faces are great. Yeah. Yeah.
He goes, can I have a word? And then he pulls you aside and he's like, so you've got to let me have this fight. I need this. I've not eaten, because seriously, you're in this war-torn region, and he's like, I've got no money, and the prize is a sack of flour. If you just take a fall, that would be amazing. And I'm like, of course, I'll do it. So you take the fall, and then you can't complete the quest. So if you take the fall for him, you don't get anything apart from literally like the satisfaction of a job well done. So I literally went, all right, you know what? That's fine. I'm not boxing. I don't care. I'm just, it felt so good to help this guy because it was such a three-dimensional. I've grown to hate the Paragon Renegade system. I really hate the bichromatic rainbow of morality in video games.
Well, we talked about that before, didn't we? Where it's like the choices you're presented with are like, it's not like
that's right. Yeah,
it's not like ambiguous. It's more like, I see a school bus full of nuns over there, and it's like detonate. And it's like, who is going to pick yes? But that's what the game gives you. And if you don't blow it up, then you're a great guy. Mm-hmm. And if you do mm-hmm. blow it up, then you're horrible.
Yeah.
But that's not a true moral choice. Like, of course, it's super black and white, which is why, and I mean, even the stuff in Mass Effect, we talked about this too, where you punch a guy on the Renegade, and I was like, that's step too far.
You punch a woman yeah. on camera. That's right.
And I know somebody said that that was kind of a running gag among the games, that this one reporter was always getting on your case. Mm. But it's nonetheless, when the first time I did it, that was the outcome. I said, this cannot be true. Cannot be actual Renegade. It's too much. It's too far.
It's nuts. But I mean,
but it's cool that there would be a quest like this boxing one where you can say for sure, this is not my character. My character would never do this. Mm-hmm. And so I cannot take this quest and I won't get the achievement. But that's who I am.
Yeah.
Just like I wouldn't get an achievement for killing every child in the game, because that's not my character. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Although,
why would I want that?
I would be horrified if we trawled through the files and sure enough, it's just like, it's like kid stab. And have you stabbed every kid in... Oh, God, that's such a grim... Like,
is that an option in the game? And the developers are just like, yeah, we had to.
It's buried in the code. It's like we have shareholders who have very specific tastes.
We had to bow towards them.
We have to cater. Man, look, we just have this one rich guy who paid for half the game, okay? We'll just hide it in the code, and if you do it, that's fine. But if not, that's cool. Because there's something so... These games are evolving as well. So I played the first one... up until about three quarters of the way through. And I was playing it in the run-up to Witcher 2, so I didn't have time, and Witcher 2 came out and I got impatient, and then I just, you know, got three quarters of the way through, uninstalled it, played 2, and then just read like a big detailed synopsis kind of filling in the blanks, so I didn't miss out on any key plot points. I replayed The Witcher 2 last week, just before starting The Witcher 3, so I was well and truly up on the plot, and I was very excited about, you know, figuring out where it went. And I am noticing how much... more nuanced the game is. Now, these guys have really grown up as storytellers, which is really nice. And I do feel like for a game that was frankly laden with titty, it's nice to see them, you know, telling adult stories, especially as the game is sitting right next to, on my desktop, I've got, you know, the shortcut to The Witcher 3, and it's right next to the shortcut for Grand Theft Auto 5. And it's nice to see two AAA games with such drastically different approaches to, you know, gender politics and storytelling and character complexity. God, I sound like an asshole.
No, it's okay. Because, like, honestly, that was one of my beef with Grand Theft Auto 5. Mm. Since I can now segue there, I was disappointed. And it's not like Grand Theft Auto 5 is drastically different from the tone of the other games in the series. But I likened it to, in my case anyway, speaking nothing of the gameplay, I'm just talking about the type of humor in it. It was like a high school reunion, and the cool kid you used to hang out with, you find out, oh, he wasn't really funny. He was just kind of a douchebag. Like, and now I've veered away from that, and it's like, I don't think this stuff is very fun. Like, what used to kill me, like, I remember the billboards for the Piss Wasser, you know, like that stuff like that in the game, and it's like, it's German. It's it's pee-pee, the beer is urine. And it's like, there's no comment being made. It's just like, the F word is hidden away.
No, there is a comment. It's a bunch of sad, angry white dudes commenting on how they think beer culture's gotten too elite and too big for its boots, which is frankly fucking pathetic. They're parodies of everything from women, especially their parodies of women. So their portrayals of things like, you know, well, there we go. So their portrayals of things like, you know, the early on in Grand Theft Auto V, there is a massive section where they deal with basically a parody of Mac, you know, and the parody of Life Invader. Remember Life Invader? There's the new kind of like, okay, so there's this really clumsy Steve Jobs parody in the start of the game. And it's like the lack of deftness and the misunderstanding of what satire is in this game. It is like you nailed it. It's like going back and hanging out with a bunch of like jerk frat boys who've never really evolved their sensibilities since high school. So people say, but GTA has always been like that. I'm like, yeah, that's the problem. The franchise is decades old. It's time to fucking evolve, which is what the guys at Project Red or Red Project, shit, I can't remember, have done with The Witcher 3.
CD Projekt Red, right?
Yeah, CD Projekt Red. They have really grown as storytellers. And granted, I would say I'm about 17, 18 hours into the game, which is a lot, given that I have other commitments, but I'm really enjoying, it is considerable, but I'm really enjoying where it's gone, and, you know, I'm so glad you like it, like, it's so...
No, it's a pleasure, and, like, again, I think it might have been, again, I'm going to praise Bloodborne, but I think that might have opened the door for me in a lot of ways, just because in the past, I had this way of playing games where it's like, I like first-person shooters, I just want to go out and get my emotions out and take out my aggression at the end of the day. But typically it was just like, I don't want to be really challenged. I just want to blow things up. But there is no preparation, and there's so much more satisfaction in this type of gameplay where you actually get involved and you let yourself be defeated and you let yourself have these difficult choices. So yes, like Witcher feel it's very satisfying in the same way. And to know that so much of the game has actually been written and there are not like, you know, you there, boy, come bring me 25 of this type of herb, which is like, I don't care. And I know that was just generated. Like nobody put that in there. That's not, I have not encountered that yet.
Honestly don't think you will. I think the game has at least tried to move beyond that tendency, which is really great. Look, if you're still on the fence about The Witcher 3, it is one of those rare cases where, because of the quality of storytelling, it really is a good jumping on point, and I genuinely mean that. But also, as a concept, it's a really cool, like having The Witcher. There's so many little details in there that are thrown in there which make the universe so full and so rich. Like even The Witcher tradition of having a steel sword for just mortals and a silver sword for monsters, and having to constantly build your own means of destroying these beasts and having to deal with really amazing moral quandaries repeatedly. It's just fucking cool. And also, just from a purely superficial standpoint, it's one of the prettiest games I've ever played. It is so pretty. Yeah, and there is a toggle option for the new NVIDIA rendering mode, which actually has realistic hair. Like, realistic hair that moves with the wind. It's amazing.
I turned that on. The computer I'm playing on is pretty... It's relatively new. It's about a year old. The graphics card in there, I don't remember the make of it, but it's very... It was top of the line in its day.
Yeah.
So I'm impressed that it looks as good as it does, because I did turn a lot of those settings up. But the one that I could not turn up was Hairworks, was NVIDIA Hairworks. It just was like 3 frames a second.
Yeah.
And it made me super curious, what's going on with that hair? Am I missing a lot?
Well, it's pretty spectacular. Like hair? Because the realistic hair growth means if you're out in the wilderness for a few days, your beard grows long and every single beard follicle sort of undulates like seaweed in at the bottom of the ocean. It's beautiful.
Oh, Christ. I don't know if I can... But then... What will that mean for my own face? Will I demand hair works for my body?
You will, and you won't get it, and you will slowly, slowly wither away and die. Hey, Chris, now, unfortunately, we both have weird prior engagements to run off to now, so we should wrap the episode up. But listen, we will let you guys know if you follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/28plays, or you can head across to Facebook, which is facebook.com/28plays later, or do we have any other ways people can contact us? Am I missing something?
You can come to my house. You can just look me up. Come on into my house, and I'll do one half of the podcast for you live at the door.
Sure. He will do a, you know, he'll do a stage reading of, he can even, if you want, he can do a, Chris can do a reenactment of previous episodes. He can do dramatic readings.
Right. If you bring a transcript and you want to be Paul, well, just do it straightforward. I'll be Paul if you wish. If you prefer, if you're a Chris fan, I don't mind. It's okay. I'll go there.
Yeah.
I'll stretch that dramatic range.
Similarly, I can read Chris's parts if you want to come and read Paul's parts. Wait, I'm Paul. Oh, God, I'm confused. Also, make sure you head across to iTunes and subscribe. Go to our website, 28playslater.com. Sorry about all the plugging, but we're just so excited and so proud of this bloody lovely thing that you're letting us do every week. And make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like and rate and all that other bullshit. But thank you so much for listening. Chris, please get some sleep. Please.
We're going to try. We're going to make an attempt. And I don't have my gaming PC here, so there will be no Witcher for me tonight. Just the witchery of parenthood.